You're tuned in to listen to Big Blue Kickoff live on Giants.com. The show will begin shortly. You're tuned in to listen to Big Blue Kickoff live on Giants.com. The show will begin shortly.
We can do that.
If we can accommodate that. Welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Tino. I'm Lance Menno. Good to be with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. We'll get to some tweets at hashtag
Minicamp is open.
Well. Yes, you can
Mini
tell.
Minicamp is open.
Tino is amped up. Can I get my arm back in the process? My goodness. I was just going to get to that. Today is day one, if you couldn't tell, of the three-day voluntary minicamp. And four players spoke to the media. We also heard from Pat Shurmur. So we'll give you a little recap of that. Jeff Risden of Real GM will join us in a little bit to help break down the draft, and we'll get to your phone call. So let's start with what Paul couldn't hide, and that is that voluntary minicamp is underway. They're going to have their first practice a little bit later on. But, Paul, we did hear from four players. We heard from Pat Shurmur. Let's start with Pat Shurmur. And
yes.
You know, one of the things he emphasized was, well, what do you want to get out of a voluntary minicamp? There's no contact, but it's the first opportunity to get some of these guys out on the field. And, you know, chemistry, grasping the offense, really the nuts and bolts, I think, is one of the primary goals in all of this.
Yeah, there's no question. As he said, you know, to install a bunch of stuff right now is just that's getting ahead of yourselves. You know, right now you want to get guys familiar with each other. They've been here for about 2 weeks now in terms of the strength and conditioning programs, but now they're actually getting to go out on the field to do walkthroughs. Now, let me make something clear, folks. They're in shirts and shorts, okay? They can do 7-on-7s, 9-on-7s, and 11-on-11s, but no contact is allowed. And that's what we're going to see this afternoon when they actually go through these walkthrough practice sessions later on today. Earlier today, they simply went through just some game formations without actually running plays. When they run them this afternoon, again, there will be no contact whatsoever. But the point is, you want to get guys feeling comfortable with each other on the field. That, to me, is really what I understood from what he said.
Well, he jokingly said, listen, as long as the guys are lining up right,
yeah,
we're step one in the right direction, just to put
Eli
things in
over
perspective.
Center.
Yes, there we go. Hey, that's progress. Speaking of Eli Manning, he was asked, what's it been like working with Eli, and what's it been like having an opportunity in the classroom for the first time? And what Pat Shurmur said, Paul, was Eli at age 37 is just as excited about adjusting and learning a new offense as
tell us
any
something
other
we
rookie.
Don't already know.
Correct. We don't. We basically knew that, but you know the energy is still high, the enthusiasm is still high. He also mentioned the same can be said for Davis Webb, and that he likes Davis Webb's enthusiasm. He likes his attention to detail, and he likes the fact that he is also learned a lot in year one, even though he hasn't gotten out on the field, just in terms of seeing things and seeing the layout of the field.
Yeah, let's make something very clear, because a lot of the folks are looking at this from the outside media as Davis Webb's tryout, so to speak, to
his pro day.
His pro day to prevent the Giants maybe from taking a quarterback. And Shurmur was very specific in saying this is not a tryout for Davis Webb. I want him to relax. I want him to have fun. I want him to do what he's supposed to do. He said, in particular, he said, I want to give Webb a good look at various defenses. So obviously when they're placing these body parts across the line of scrimmage for him, they want to know that he's recognizing what he sees. That's the big thing. And then when he takes his drop back, his mechanics are solid and he's delivering the ball properly. This is stuff that won't surprise us because we've seen him do it now for a year. But Pat Shurmur needs to see that in person. I anticipate that he will. Shurmur himself said that Davis, in characteristics, he said, Webb cares. He's an extremely hard worker. He's smart. He's learned a lot of things. Now he must take it to the field for Shurmur's eyes to see. I also think I want to blend one other guy's comments about Webb in at this point. Sterling Shepard said he lives in the same building as Davis Webb, and during the offseason, they were literally almost daily going through the playbook to make sure that he knows everything like the back of his hand. And so, obviously, Shep has tremendous regard for the young quarterback.
And speaking of Sterling Shepard, I'm going to throw Olivier Vernon into this. The two players in particular made comparisons or noted what their previous coordinators did last year with their respective teams. In case in point, Shepard mentioned what Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs have achieved in the Vikings offense, that Shepard envisions the receiving core getting to those heights. And then Olivier Vernon noted Chandler Jones's production with the Arizona Cardinals. The former New England Patriot, he moved to that stand-up linebacker position, still was utilized on the line, and wound up leading the NFL in sacks last season.
Yeah, although Vernon was quick to say, we are different players.
Yeah.
Okay, Jones does his thing, I do my thing. But there's no doubt that Vernon is interested to hear about how he's going to be in the linebacker's room primarily as opposed to the defensive end's room. But I will say this. While that's been communicated to us in the past by the assistants that Vernon will be in that room more often, we also heard from Betcher previously to this saying, oh, don't worry, he's primarily going to be a pass rusher.
Yeah.
He won't be in coverage all that much. So I'm a little curious as to exactly how much linebacker room study he will be doing if he will be primarily a pass rusher. It seems to me, you know, linebacker responsibilities incur a whole lot more than that, and the percentage of pass rushing is certainly much lower on the list than it would be for him as a defensive end. I'm going to call Olivier Vernon a stand-up defensive end as opposed to calling him a linebacker until I see otherwise and I see that his responsibilities encompass more of a scope of a linebacker. I'm simply going to call him a stand-up defensive end.
Well, that's fair. I think they're going to move him around, so whatever umbrella you want to put him in, I think he's versatile enough that you can throw him everywhere. The other thing related to that, Paul, if you remember when the assistants spoke to the media last month, what they mentioned is on the third day of practice, usually on Thursday, when they really get going and preparing for the upcoming opponent, they usually try to implement some of their pass downs, pass rushing schemes.
Right.
And normally on those days, you take those jack hybrid type of players and you mix and match them. You move them into both rooms. They usually have interaction with the defensive line room as well as the linebacking room. So
yes,
I think Vernon's going to be that type of player that every Thursday, he's probably going to be moved around and get a taste of various different positions.
Certainly fair. The one thing we know is that he is their most accomplished pass rusher, and so they will try to find whatever ways they can to get him to the quarterback.
We also heard from Janoris Jenkins, and Janoris Jenkins, coming off a season-ending injury, said that obviously he is looking forward to getting back on the field. He mentioned that he's optimistic that Eli Apple will have a bounce-back season as Eli also looks to recover. And he mentioned it's a little different not having DRC around, given the fact that those three were the main corners. But all in all, Janoris Jenkins seems as if, health-wise, he's ready to get back to work.
Yes, and we know he was banged up last year. He said that he had actually been banged up coming into the season and it only got worse during the course of the year. We did see him fight through a lot of injuries as the Giants just struggled during the 2017 campaign. So I think, you know, from a health perspective, you know, it's disappointing that Collins had to go back for a second procedure on his arm, but they're saying he's going to be ready for training camp. And once that gets squared away, you'd like to believe the Giants will be in good health moving forward.
All right, we'll get more into voluntary minicamp in a little bit, but right now we want to turn our attention to the other big storyline this week. And yes, we are inching even closer to the NFL draft, which gets underway Thursday night in Big D, and we are now joined by Jeff Risden of Real GM to provide more insight on what we are hearing across the NFL landscape and get an idea of what to look for in terms of the prospects. Jeff, you got Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you here, Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. How's everything? Appreciate the time.
Oh, my pleasure to be with you. We're 2 days out. I can't wait for it to finally get here and we can end all the speculation, because if you follow along with all the rumors, your head's going to go crazy with whiplash going back and forth on who's going to take who and where. It's a crazy year.
Jeff, it's interesting you say that, because I'm in my 36th year covering the Giants and the NFL, and I've been telling people this may be the most frenetic, rumor-filled draft that I can ever remember. And, of course, that's primarily because electronic media has exploded out of control over the last decade. I mean, you know, back in the 80s, there wasn't Twitter. There weren't blogs. There was only
ESPN. There was
ESPN.
Pen and paper, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I get it. There were different mechanisms to get this stuff out there. But now it seems like every 5 minutes, somebody's got a trade rumor, somebody's got a mock draft. How difficult is it for you as someone who takes this stuff seriously and it's part of what you do in terms of your hardcore work that you have to deal with so much of the icing, so to speak, instead of the actual beef?
It's interesting that you're absolutely right. I've been covering the draft since 2004 and was a fan of it before that. I can't remember such violent swings and attitudes for so many players. I put a thing up on the Browns wire today where I'm the executive editor about Baker Mayfield being in real play for number one.
Yeah.
Really?
You
know, he was fourth or fifth on their list. I've come to just kind of embrace it. I have a strange mellowness about it. I love not knowing. The last few years, I always knew who was going to be the number one pick. I had a really good idea of who the teams that I follow closely were going to take. This year, I don't have that, and I think it's fun. It brings some of the life back to it. Last year, at this time, I knew that Myles Garrett was going to be the number one pick. I had a pretty good idea of who was going where in the three or four picks after that. This year, I don't know, and I kind of like that.
Well, you cover the Browns, as you just said a second ago, with the Browns Wire, Jeff. We would be remiss if we did not start off the basis of this conversation with the Cleveland Browns. They have the number one pick right in front of the New York Giants. Although there's been a lot of flopping over the course of the media headlines, it seems as though, as we have addressed many of these media folks in the last few days, it looks like, can I dare say, 95% sure the Browns are taking a QB at number one and therefore leaving Saquon Barkley to the Giants at number two.
Oh, I absolutely think so. I don't think there's any question that the Browns are taking a quarterback. The question is which one, and I think it's down to either Sam Darnold or Baker Mayfield. I don't think Josh Allen is as in the equation as what was expected. Keep in mind, this is a team that got Tyrod Taylor as a bridge, but he's a short-term bridge. He's only 1 year. And if you listen to people much higher up in the NFL talk, they think that Josh Allen is at least 2 years away. Well, the Browns learned their lesson with DeShone Kizer last year that you can't put a guy on the field without him being ready. And I don't think they want to run that risk again, even with a new regime. And I think they learned that lesson. So I do think that Darnold, if you can buy him a year, can be great. Baker Mayfield, if you can buy him 6 months, I think he'll be great. And I think that's the way they see it. So I'm very confident that Saquon Barkley will be there at the Giants for two.
Well, Jeff, speaking of that subject, I was very intrigued by a tweet you sent out a few hours ago. And as a basketball fan, this is why it jumped out at me. And you said that you agreed with something that Nate Burleson from the NFL Network brought up about Josh Allen being sort of like a high school prospect going straight to the NBA, which I think is an interesting comparison. Mm-hmm. And then you used as your comparison former Cleveland Cavaliers first-round pick, Sagana Jop, who, for those of you who follow the NBA very closely, that should be a name that at least comes to mind. You know, why are you concerned about Josh Allen not being ready to make such a significant jump as some of those other quarterbacks that you mentioned?
I just think that his the problem with he has is that he's inaccurate and he doesn't have poor mechanics in the inaccuracy like a lot of people have mentioned. He's a very reactionary thrower. He does not make anticipatory throws. Former NFL quarterback Dan Orlovsky broke down some of the decision-making processes on Twitter. I think Dan did a great job doing it, of how he doesn't see defense, how he doesn't comprehend what's coming at him. Yes, he's inaccurate, but he's well behind the curve in terms of mental processing on the field. And if you know anything about playing quarterback in the NFL, you know that's a death knell. I really don't see how he's going to be a productive NFL quarterback. He's a wonderful guy. I haven't personally met him. I did stand in front of him in the combine and asked him a question, but it seems like a great guy. You know, teammates love him. Opponents rave about him. Coaches love the fact that he's enthusiastic and coachable, but, you know, that doesn't get done all the time. And just to go back to Jop, I am a Cleveland Cavaliers fan, unfortunately.
Understandable, yes.
And I was privy to seeing Sagana Joff's tryout video when he was working to get over into the NBA and get into their version of the scouting combine. He quite literally could not dribble and move at the same time. And I think that's the level of play where Josh Allen is at right now.
Wow.
He was terrible in accuracy against not very good competition. And I'll bring this up because it came from the combine. I asked, one of the things that's brought up against Missouri, he only played in the Mountain West. I asked an NFL GM to name me three defenders from the Mountain West Conference. He couldn't do it. So the level of competition isn't that good, aside from the fact that he didn't have a whole lot to work with this past year.
Perhaps this is a good time to tell him that Josh Allen is my favorite quarterback in this class.
Hey, it's okay, but you know what, Jeff?
That's what you get in the draft, though. There's such divergence of opinions on everybody. Browns fans, they pretty much want to kill Baker Mayfield for what he did to Ohio State, planting the flag in the center of the field. It's going to be interesting to see how they reconcile that if he winds up being there. There's a lot of them who don't like Sam Darnold on the flip side of that because he couldn't beat Ohio State. That fan base interreaction there is a weird dynamic that I don't think it's talked about enough for Cleveland. It's crazy, man. There's people that don't want Josh Rosen because he's too smart. I never really realized why that was an issue, but it's so polarizing and so much fun this year.
You know, Jeff, I think though that's the point. The point that each one of these top four quarterbacks does something better than the other guy. I mean, Josh Allen has the best arm. There's no question. His frame, his physicality,
absolutely.
He's got the best skill set of any of these guys. There's no doubt about that in my mind, and I think most people agree, as you just said. But the thing about it is, what is it that you're shopping for? You know, one guy's got the best mindset. The other guy's got the best physical skill set. The other guy's got the best attitude or grit. Each one of these guys has something better than the other three, and each one of these guys has a flaw that the other three guys don't have, which bottom line tells you none of them should be selected in the top five of this draft, to be perfectly frank with you, because none of these guys are Peyton Manning. None of these guys are Luck. None of these guys are Big Ben. You know, none of these guys should be taken that high, to be perfectly honest. I mean, that's if there's no consensus, isn't that what that tells you?
It is, and I also think that it matters who your coach is and who your team is and what you're going for. Do you need a guy that can start right away? Do you need a guy that you're trying to develop with a rookie coach, sort of the way that Jared Goff had out in Los Angeles when they brought in McVay to help him out? The different stages of the team matter in this, too.
Yeah.
In terms of what you're saying about going in the top five, I think the positional importance dictates that you have to do that if you don't have one. But in terms of overall ranking on the player scale, you're right. There are a lot more players who are more talented and more ready to help your NFL team right now in the top five than there are at quarterback.
Well, with that being said, Jeff, and to Paul's point, I mean, if you're Cleveland, though, and yes, you can say there's an urgency to get a quarterback because Tyrod Taylor may not be the answer long term, but if these quarterbacks are not necessarily separating themselves much from the rest of the pack, then if you're Cleveland, what about the mindset of, well, why don't we take the surest thing to perhaps getting to Canton, which could be a Saquon Barkley or a Bradley Chubb, and then perhaps settling for a quarterback at four, especially if they're high on Rosen, Darnold, or Barkley, and in all likelihood, one of those three guys is going to be there at four.
Yeah, and I think this is where the market dynamics come in with quarterbacks. They know that the Jets did not trade up to three to not take a quarterback.
Right.
I think they're very confident that they can get either Saquon Barkley or Bradley Chubb at number four, and I think they're very happy with that. Again, Cleveland is an odd animal. It's my hometown. And you'll note that I'm not a Browns fan, even though I grew up there. And one of the reasons is that it's a very peculiar fan base. And they do have a lot of sway over the owner, Jimmy Haslam, who's not of the strongest mind, I guess is the most polite way to say that. He took advice from a homeless man to draft Johnny Manziel, and look what happened. They do need to take a quarterback. They have passed on so many, losing out on Carson Wentz, trading the pick that became Deshaun Watson. They cannot do that again. They just can't. So that's where they're at with the number one pick.
Let me ask you this. Is it your impression from what you have heard over the course of the last several weeks that there, in fact, will ultimately be trades involving the top five? Or do you suspect that a lot of this carnival-type atmosphere that we're hearing about teams dancing in and out of the top five is just going to be a bunch of smoke, and it all turns out to be a bunch of drama for nothing?
That's a great question, Paul. I think we will see four or five traded. The Browns' second pick, or the Broncos trading out at five. I do think there's enough demand for the quarterbacks that somebody like Buffalo or Miami or maybe Arizona even for coming up from 15 is going to go up and get a quarterback. Will it be at four? Will it be at five? Will Denver want to go from five to four, sort of the way that the 49ers did last year with the Bears, that little swap? I think those are in play. I don't see the Giants moving back. I really don't. I think that they know that if they move from there, they're not going to get a player of Saquon Barkley or Bradley Chubb or whoever they might be the apple of their eye. They're not going to get a player of that impact level if they fall back. And the Jets already moved up. I don't think they're going to fall back after they do it. So four and five are your pressure points. I tend to think that the Browns want to keep the pick because I know they really do like Bradley Chubb. And the idea of pairing him with Myles Garrett, my goodness, block that. Yeah. I think that's very appealing for them.
Absolutely. I'm in agreement with you there. As we're talking with Jeff Risden, covers the NFL and the draft for Real GM. He's the managing editor for the Browns Wire. And speaking of value and whether or not you're maximizing the value, offensive lineman always comes up because that's just important to me in terms of helping the success of your quarterback. If you have nobody that can block, then good luck trying to bring in a quarterback that's going to thrive. And, you know, that's why I like Cleveland's situation. I actually think they have a respectable offensive line. With that being said, Jeff, Quentin Nelson is a very appealing name, the guard for Notre Dame. What are your thoughts on him? And, you know, does he warrant a top five pick based on what you've seen in college?
Oh, absolutely he does. He's the best player on this board. Like I said, I've been evaluating prospects since 2004. He is the second highest graded player I've ever had. Joe Thomas was number one. The Browns are obviously going to miss Joe Thomas. I'm fortunate enough to have seen Notre Dame play twice every year. He's so good. And the side part of seeing him live is that you get to see him interacting on the sidelines. He is a leader as a guard. That's not something that you typically see. This was the guy who, you know, Mike McGlinchey is a top 15 prospect. He deferred to Quentin Nelson when they were on the sidelines in those, you know, meetings and huddles. And that's not a shot at McGlinchey. That's talking about how good Nelson is and how respected he is. I would have no problem if the Giants took him at number two. It doesn't seem, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, it doesn't seem like they're looking that way, but I certainly would consider it.
Let me ask you this. As you look at this draft, and we've talked about the Giants' needs ad infinitum now for several months, and I want to just, if I can, concentrate on them for a minute, Jeff. Top of the second round, top of the third round, let's assume the Giants wind up with Barkley, which seems to be the chalk out of Vegas these days. Can they get, in your mind, a quality plug-and-play starting offensive lineman at the top of round two, and then maybe at the top of round three get themselves maybe a corner or maybe a linebacker, maybe a defensive end who's going to have the opportunity to challenge for a starting job as well?
Yeah, that position at the top of the second is interesting. I don't think you're getting an offensive tackle there, but if you want a guard or a center, a guy like Billy Price or Frank Ragnow or possibly Will Hernandez, those guys, one of those guys at least, should all be there. And those guys are instant starters for you. And Austin Corbett from Nevada is another guy who fits into that bill. And he might actually be available later. So, I think you can do that. As far as the third round, I love the off-the-ball linebacker group. It does seem a little top-heavy, though. But you can find guys, Jerome Baker from Ohio State. There's several guys that can, you know, they're not going to be great, but they're going to be at least equivalent to what you lost in Devin Kennard and probably better than him. More well-rounded, I should say. You can get those guys. Yeah, so I like the idea of where they're at. I also think that pick at the top of the second is prime trade material if somebody is falling unexpectedly out of the first round, and that's where the Giants could pick up an extra, you know, second-round pick or third-round pick or something for the future to guarantee. I think those first three or four picks of the second round are so valuable this year, and I think that it would be wise to look at least what the market is for those.
Well, and we saw that actually when the Giants were lower down in the second round a few years ago. Tennessee was higher, and the Giants wound up moving up because Landon Collins fell into the second round. So we could very well see that come to fruition again, Jeff. And, you know, speaking of depth at various positions, while the assumption seems to be that Saquon Barkley could very well be there at number two for the Giants and is great value, I think you could argue, Jeff, that that there's a great deal of depth at running back in this year's class, and there's a lot of other running backs that I think can come in year one and make a significant impact. How much do you see the drop-off at running back after Saquon Barkley? How close is the gap between him and the rest of the pack?
I think it's closer than a lot of fans realize it is. Guys like Sony Michel, Darius Geis, I'm a big fan of Ronald Jones out of USC, Nick Chubb, Rashad Penny, even guys like Kerryon Johnson. These are guys who are going to be NFL starters, and you're going to get these guys in the second and then possibly even the top of the third round. There is Barkley, I've said this before, I don't think Saquon Barkley is the best rusher. If you're just handing the ball off to your running back, he's not the best guy in this class. He gives you the dimension. He's one of the best receivers in this class, too. He just happens to play running back.
Yeah.
I think he can give you that sort of Marshall Faulk style. Obviously, they're different players, but that sort of impact on your offense, where he can get you 100 catches as well as 200 carries and dominate the defense in those ways, and that is valuable, and no other guy comes close in that. But if you're just talking about a guy to run the ball and hand off, you're not looking at any drop-off at all, and I dare say there's a couple of guys who might actually be better than Saquon Barkley at that in this draft.
All right, let me ask you a little bit of a generic question. Who's the one guy who every year, you know, ESPN likes to get the guy in the green room who drops like a stone, and they stick the camera in his face, and they make him miserable, and he's fallen, and he's fallen, and he's fallen. Who's the one name who you could see be that guy this year? And conversely, do you think there's also a guy who we're not really pumping up a whole lot who suddenly is going to find himself in the top 10?
Top 10 is a reach, but I'd tell you, Colton Miller from UCLA, the offensive tackle, incredible physical specimen. Somebody actually on Twitter last night, I liked this, compared him to Bruce Campbell when he came out of Maryland. And I hadn't been able to place my finger on it because Miller, if you watch his tape, he's a fourth or a fifth round guy at best. But if you watch what he did at the combine and see him work out take into account his inexperience, there's a guy who's going to go a lot higher than I think most people think he is. If you're looking for a guy who's going to drop, I mean, Maurice Hurst seems like he has fallen, and I actually don't know if he's going to be there at the green room or not. One of the guys that I think fans think is going higher than what he is Micah Fitzpatrick, the defensive back out of Alabama. I still think he's a top 15, top 20 pick at the worst. But I don't think he's a top 10 pick, and I think there's a lot of people who think that he is.
Yeah, well, his versatility is really important, but I also do think that depending upon your coordinator and his scheme and how you're going to use him, kind of like with Peppers last year, it was like you're going to take a guy like that who's a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
You better be able to use him the right way and get the most out of him, otherwise you're not getting the true value.
Yeah, and Browns fans aren't too happy about the way that he was used last year, playing as a de facto punt returner on first and 10, 25 yards off the line of scrimmage as a free safety when he's a strong safety linebacker hybrid. We're hoping that changes in Cleveland because that just didn't work. He did play well at the end of the year once they did put him in the box, once Derek Kindred got hurt. But we'll see. Now they have Demaryius Randall in there, who the Packers misused when they took him in the first round, making him a cornerback, even though he's a free safety. Teams do this all the time. It's weird how often they draft a player and ask him to do things that they haven't done before or don't appear to be good at. But that's part of the fun of the draft.
Yeah, Shaq Thompson's another guy that comes to mind when he came out.
Yeah,
there was also questions.
That's a good example,
safety,
too.
Linebacker, and Caroline obviously has utilized him, and it's worked out well. So I think we always see a player every single year. Well, Jeff, everybody who comes on the program, we always like to get their predictions. So I want to know, who do you think the Giants are going to take? And then if you were Dave Gettleman, who would you take at the number two spot?
That's a good question. I think it will be Saquon Barkley, the running back from Penn State, and I don't think that I could quibble with that. And if I'm Gettleman, I'm seriously considering that. But I am taking Quentin Nelson because I know that guy is going to be great. I have no doubt in my mind that Quentin Nelson is going to be a great NFL player right away.
I'm going to get one more in here, Jeff. I'm going to keep you another couple of seconds. What would have to be the price? What would be the package to entice you to trade out at two? I know you said you don't think the Giants will. I don't think it's likely either because I don't think they're going to get anybody willing to give them a Fort Knox full of picks to make a deal. But if one of these teams at, let's just say, 4, 5, or 6 decided they wanted to make a deal, what would be the price in your mind to make that happen?
I want their first and second this year and next year to do that.
Wow.
Four premium picks, which is what I've been saying. So that's, I'm with you.
Because to Jeff's point, and you emphasized this earlier, and this is where I've always felt, Jeff, once you move out of the top 10, you're taking yourself out of a position to get a premier player. And the percentages fall in terms of that player likely becoming a Hall of Famer or becoming a franchise type of player. So if you're going to take that risk, you need to make sure that you're getting a package of selections that will help you in future seasons in case the guy that you take this year doesn't pan out.
Hot rumor, Jeff, the one that's kind of floating around the last couple days, I think NFL Network or ESPN, I don't remember which one was floating, the three-team deal involving the Bills and the Giants and possibly the Colts. Have you heard anything about that at all? Is having any legs?
It seems like a headache to me. I don't understand the logistics behind it. Maybe it's one of those deals where the two teams do make a trade, and then the third gets involved after the first one is executed. As of now, the NFL is still not the NBA, and not that comfortable in doing those types of things. So I'll believe that when I see it.
As Gettleman said, you can't get too cute.
Well, plus, Jeff, you know, one Sagana Jopp reference, I think, is enough for this year's NFL draft. I don't know if you want to go back in the day with more Cleveland draft picks that haven't panned out. We don't want to cause you that much pain on this program.
Mel Turpin, anybody?
The visions of Danny Ferry in my head. It's just not good.
Oh, my.
Absolutely. Well, we could talk Terrell Brandon and some of all those other good guys that have suited up for the Cleveland Cavs over the course of the years. Well, Jeff Risden, kind enough to give us a few minutes, covers the NFL in the draft for Real GM. You could also catch him as the managing editor of the Browns Wire. Jeff, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jeff.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. So Jeff Risden with his latest in terms of the rumorville across the NFL landscape. And he said Barkley, but he is intrigued by Quentin Nelson. And he said, we're talking about the second highest grade if you go back in the history of the draft. So that speaks volumes of where they think of him as an offensive lineman.
It is very difficult to pass on a guy who, again, could be fitted for a Hall of Fame jacket, as Gettleman has said, when you're that high in the draft. And you know, if you're to believe the consensus, Barkley could be that guy, Nelson could be that guy, and Chubb doesn't have a unanimous opinion on that. From what I've heard, maybe two-thirds of the people or half of the people think he could be that guy. But there are two surefire Hall of Fame jackets, according to the consensus. Chubb is like half, and then there's nobody else. I don't hear anybody else getting that kind of chatter at all.
That is a must-have or don't even think about passing up on.
And, I mean, let me ask you this, okay? We talk about at number two, you got to pick a guy, you know, with the yellow jacket caliber talent. Well, Michael Strahan was a Hall of Fame defensive end for this very franchise. He was a second-round pick, by the way. Is anybody even saying remotely that Bradley Chubb has any stretch of the imagination, a fraction of the talent that Michael Strahan had? I haven't heard that at all. Have you?
No, I have not heard that comparison. But here's the thing.
There's your bar. There's your Hall of Fame defensive end, Michael Strahan.
There is your bar.
Bradley Chubb is no Michael Strahan.
But
not even close.
At the same time, when Strahan came in, was there talk that he was definitely going to be a sure Hall of Famer?
Well, coming out of Texas Southern, which was a very, very low-level program, the terms of competition really dropped him. The Giants were like, no, we think he's got potential. And, of course, it worked out for them. The competition just, you know, destroyed his grade. But the point is, if the guy's got to measure up to that level of player, I don't hear anybody talking about Bradley Chubb like that. Again, I think he'd be an okay selection, but I don't see how anyone could grade him higher than the other two guys. I just don't see it.
And I'm with you, because when we were talking about those three, if you would ask me my opinion ranking-wise, Barkley, Nelson, Chubb
Without
would
question.
Be my order.
Without question.
On a board, if you were in that selection situation where you could choose any of the three.
Yeah.
So I'm in agreement with you there. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. Let's open up the phone lines. We check in with Jimmy in Rose Hill. Jimmy, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good night,
first
Jimmy.
Of all, I want to just compliment you on the show. Having
Thank
all
you.
Of these people from, you know, sideline reporters and guys covering the different colleges gives you a whole different, you know, perspective on these kids, and it's really eye-opening. So kudos to you guys for doing that.
Well, thanks. Great.
Appreciate it. They know these players better than any of us do.
you're absolutely right. Listen, just a little background. I mean, I attended my first Giant game when I was 9 years of age back in 1959.
Nice.
They were playing Cleveland. Then 3 years later, we were fortunate to get season tickets. So we've had those since 62. So over the time, I have seen a lot of football, a lot of good football, a lot of bad football. And
everything in between.
But to back up on a point that Paul made a couple of days ago, he brought up the name George Young, which I haven't heard. And in my mind, George Young is the guy that literally laid the framework and the foundation for the organization that we see today. If it wasn't for George, I would have pulled my hair out a long time ago. And I actually got into it. I actually shared some notes with him back and forth. I wrote him a note when he first got hired, and to my surprise, he wrote back. And there's a couple of things that he said that Gettleman, to me, is like his son in terms of their philosophy.
He's like the George Young whisperer. He really is. Yeah, it's incredible.
I mean, he's the first guy. I mean, Gettleman talks about Hawk Mollies. I remember George telling me one time I met him up at Pace after I sent him a couple of notes, introduced myself. We sat down. We talked for a while when the Giants were training up there. And he said, Jim, he said, God put only a few elephants on this earth, and if you find one that plays football, you got to take them.
Yes.
So that belief in big people.
Yep.
He also told me that you can never have enough good players regardless of positions. I don't know if you remember when they took Banks, mm-hmm. they had a linebacking core that consisted of Carson, Van Pelt, Taylor. People said, why are you taking a linebacker with the third overall choice? And why do that?
Yeah, Byron Hunt was there too.
You got to do it. I mean, they've got a great ball player there. You got to do it. I think Dave has got a lot of that same genetics that George had, and it's given me some comfort because I think this roster does have to be rebuilt. The one thing everybody agrees on is that the drafts over the last few years have really depleted this roster, and we got to go about building it back up again. That's why I wouldn't be totally opposed to a trade that gets them the number of picks that would allow them to rebuild the draft, but the roster. But I don't think they're going to do it. I think it's going to come down to Barkley and Nelson. If they can make a deal, say with Denver, I don't know if Denver wants to move up, go back as far as five, and then get a guy like Nelson at five, I would do it. But if they stay at two, I think they're going to take Barkley, but I agree with your guest. If it was me, and I think if it was George, I think he would take Quentin Nelson. That's what the game's won. It's all said and done. It's still a game of blocking and tackling. It's one up front. And to get a kid like Nelson, I think you'd have put him in there for the next 14 years. You know, you've got no problems at all about your offensive line. So that's what I would do. I'm curious to hear your opinions on it.
Well, you know, I agree with you philosophically, and I've said that Gettleman reminds me a lot of George Young, and Pat Shermer reminds me a lot of Dan Reeves, to be perfectly honest with you. So I'll evoke two names from the past for you. But I think that Barkley, because he is truly not a running back but an offensive weapon, and he can also, by the way, be a huge force on special teams with his kick return abilities.
Yeah, do you want to put a second-round choice, though, in special teams?
Well, they put Beckham back there on occasion when they really needed a lift. I mean, it does happen. Guys,
yeah, I know,
you know.
I know, but I wouldn't sleep well at night.
I'd rather they didn't do that, too.
Antonio Brown is also the main return guy for the Steelers,
he is.
Jimmy. So
yeah, I'd rather they don't do that, but it could be a weapon if necessary, is the point.
Okay,
I just think that Barkley brings such a widespread array of talents and can beat you in so many ways. One of the other things, and I appreciate that you're an old school guy because I love talking old school. Remember, Bill Parcells used to tell us back in the 80s when we would sit in the press room, we'd have many of these awesome football discussions just to talk football. He'd spend an hour and a half on a Friday afternoon before practice just shooting football with all of the beat guys who were sitting in that press room. And those were the most educational sessions I've ever had.
I bet.
And Bill, one of the things Bill used to say is that you line up your 11 against their 11 on offense and on defense. And the first thing you do when you sit down, you get ready to get your game plan going is you check off each one of those matchups, who has the edge. And when you see your board and you say, okay, there's the checks on one side, there's the checks on the other side, that in itself is going to give you your initial impression as to how you feel you stand going into that game. Second thing you do, you look at each side of the ball and specials, and you say, okay, who is the one guy who could absolutely wreck the game at any time during the course of the game, that no matter what we do right, this guy is a game breaker, a game changer, a guy who could wreck it? And think about this. For the last several years, outside of Beckham, who have the Giants had on the offensive side of the ball who could wreck a game, who could make defensive coordinators stay up at night on Monday nights thinking about, oh my goodness, I got to worry about this guy. And that's what you want to do. Bill used to say the key to winning games is getting the edge before kickoff. You want to impose your will on the opposition. And by doing that, you get in their heads before the game, by getting them out of their comfort zone to start thinking about doing things that they don't want to do and things that they do best, they're going to get away from because they're so concerned about what you do. That's what Bill taught us.
Well,
and so,
yeah, listen, that's, yeah, that, I'm certainly not going to argue with Bill.
But that's what Barkley does.
I played a little football in high school, college, locally. To me, though, the way you impose your will on a team is
you pound them up front.
There's no doubt about that, Jimmy. Listen, I'm in agreement with you.
You pound them up front. I get it. I get it. But I will tell you, Barkley will keep defensive coordinators up at night on Monday.
And but if you got nobody to block for him, then I don't think it's going to matter much.
Now, back in January,
I like Nelson.
And I believe me, if Barkley gets taken by the Browns, I would take Nelson in a heartbeat at number two. Trust me when I tell you that.
No question.
But here's the thing. I said in January, if the Giants did not improve their offensive line, you could be my witness. I said Barkley would not be a great pick because you won't maximize his value. The Giants have to address the O-line before they think about taking Barkley. They did that. They went out and signed two free agents on the O-line. They're going to get a starting offensive lineman probably in round two.
Well, you still got your right tackle, and John Jerry, I think, is not worth the artificial turf he plays on. I mean, they still, at this point, in my estimation, they've got the center is okay. The kid Mamey, who knows,
and he's all right.
And sold us. So that's still, even if you give him that, that's only 60% of your line.
Well, there's certainly positions up for grabs, Jimmy. There's no doubt about that. I don't think anything is solidified with respect to the offensive line. And I'm in agreement with you because, I've looked at a lot of the teams that have all of a sudden made a jump to the postseason or have been in constant competition.
It's about the running game.
And it's always about the ground attack. And why are they successful on the ground? Because of a consistent, strong offensive line. You look at Dallas. Dallas invested a bunch of first-round picks in their offensive line. Tom Coughlin and the Jaguars revamped their offensive line. They went out and they signed a big free agent this year. So I'm with you. And I'm also, on the flip side of what Paul said, I agree that Barkley you could take advantage of 10 times more when you have a great offensive line. I would also say when you have a good offensive line, that doesn't mean that Joe Schmo should be back there, but if you take a guy in the second round, you take a guy in the third round, who's to say that that guy can't be successful if your offensive line is in good shape? For example, the other example, Jimmy, that I'm going to throw out here.
Prejudice because that's the position I played in college.
But I got you.
I still think that's the game is won up front. It's real. Lombardi said it's a real simple game. It's a game of
absolutely
blocking and tackling and a lot of other stuff. To take a McGuire expression is kind of, it's window dressing, it's French pastry. It's what gets fans excited. It's what, gets all the eyeballs on the TV. But bottom line, nothing happens if you don't win the line of scrimmage.
Totally agree with you. It's all about the trenches. It's always all about the trenches. I'm just telling you, I think Barkley is so special, I'd make an exception in this case. But we're on the same page.
I did see him. I did see him. I went out to a Penn State game. My alma mater's former head coach was the offensive coordinator. He's got the job down at Mississippi State, Joe Moorhead, another name to keep an eye on. But I went out there to see Joe, and we saw the Michigan State game when they won it. And this kid is the kid is special. I mean, and I watched a lot of State games because of Moorhead's connection out there. And, there's no doubt about it. I mean, he's not chopped liver. But I just think that in the state that the Giants are in right now, they either move out of that pick to pick up some more assets, and it's got to be the right deal, Paul. I agree with you. But if not, if they can't do that, then I know a lot of people on Friday morning will be going crazy. But if they take Quentin Nelson, I'll rest my head easy on that pillow as well.
Well, and listen, we hear you, Jimmy, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in.
Thank you, guys.
I think no matter who the Giants take, there's always going to be some segment of the fan base that loves it and some segment of the fan base that would have played the coulda, shoulda game. I don't think you're ever going to please everybody under the circumstances.
No, those top two guys, you can't go wrong with either one, and even Chubb is a legitimate pick at that spot.
Yeah.
After that, you could make a very strong argument that maybe they didn't get as much value as they needed to if they wind up going away from those three players. But who knows? Maybe they know something that we don't.
Well, and just the point about the trade and
they're getting
the price,
paid to know.
They are. In terms of, you know, whether or not the Giants should move down to the last caller's point so that you gain volume, it's always what you do with that volume. The volume's great, but you got to then take advantage of the volume. Whereas with number two, I would hesitate moving down so quickly knowing that the chances of you picking a player at number two that's going to pan out are much higher than you grabbing the boatload of picks and then everybody panning out. And that's just the numbers game based on research and track records that we've seen in NFL drafts. Let's head back to the phone lines. We've got Christian in New York. Christian, what's happening?
Hey, guys.
How you doing, Christian?
I'm so glad that we're only a couple days out now.
You're glad. How about us?
Oh, I bet.
I mean, but I'm ready to draft right now. Why do we got to wait more?
Sure you are.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time, like if a prospect isn't asked to do something in college, like I guess it's just safer to think that they're not quite as able to. But with Barkley not having such a good offensive line in college.
Uh-huh.
It's just hard to think that he had much room to even run between the tackles, and he really just bounced everything because he was able to. And I think that he's going to bring a number two overall pick impact to a team. So
you make a great point.
I really want the Giants to take him.
You make a great point about the line because we had Jack Ham on, the former Penn State Hall of Fame linebacker who obviously does Penn State radio, and discussed him in detail with us and thought that the concept that he bounces stuff outside too much was ridiculous because the O-line wasn't very good. And I'll even go further and tell you that an independent NFL scout said to me, have you seen Gesicki block? He's going to be one of the top tight ends taken in the draft because he's an outstanding pass receiver. He doesn't block worth a... Okay.
You're talking about the Penn State tight end.
Yes.
Well, no, just in case anybody was confused. Yeah.
So you're talking about a suspect blocking offensive line and a tight end who wanted no part of blocking. Is it any wonder that Saquon Barkley did a lot of bouncing around and had some hesitation moves and often didn't hit the hole as hard as he should have? Every running back will tell you those instincts start getting affected when you can't have confidence and run assertively because the guys in front of you aren't doing what they're supposed to do.
And those things can be taught by positional coaches, and you can point that out on film.
Well, it's not taught. It's habit. If he gets to a team, and I think the Giants' offensive line is getting better. I think it is. Okay. If he gets to a team where they can instill the confidence in him that the block will be there, hit it.
Yeah.
That's not about showing him how to do it. That's about him having the belief the block is going to be there.
But also pointing it out on film that this is how the scheme runs and the hole's going to be there and have
confidence to stick
to the scheme and push to the hole. I mean, that's the bigger point that I was bringing on. I think when you feel, and Dave Gettleman touched on this in his press conference, and we'll let you continue here, Christian. What he said is you've got to be careful when you watch film of a college player. And there are things that maybe he was not asked to do, and then you get concerned, and that's why you don't take the player. You have to look at the film and say, if I bring him into my system, can we utilize him? Is there enough that we can teach him that he can then take advantage of what we're asking him to do? And I think Barkley, to your point, Christian, is that type of player where you see, obviously, he's got an unbelievable amount of upside and talent. And if you bring him into your system with a good offensive line, I think most executives would figure he's going to have a very good chance to thrive, as opposed to a player that, you know, maybe doesn't have good technique and does not have good decision-making. And I don't necessarily see that when you watch him on film.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the ball. He's got the vision with the ball in his hands. He's definitely got the power. So all he really has to learn how to do is basically just run some people over at times when they're in his way, between the tackles. And, you know, I don't see that really being an issue just because he didn't do it too often in college. But at the same time, I would be just as happy with trading back and getting a couple picks and then a different running back. So basically for me at number two, it's Barkley or trade back if, you know, that's just what I would want.
All right, Christian. Well, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for joining in on the fun of the game of speculation, which will certainly be coming to an end in a few days. Ty is in Maryland. He joins us now on Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. Ty, what's happening?
What's going on, fellas? It's been a long time.
It sure has. Been a long
time. So what do you
How
have
you
for
guys
us?
Doing today?
Doing all right, Ty.
Hello.
All right. Well, before I get started, I just wanted to say, you know, I'm not feeling moving out of the second pick. I'm really not feeling that. And then I think we stay there, and we get Barkley. That's saying if the Browns don't get Barkley, which I don't think they will because their offensive line is shot right now.
I disagree with you, Ty. They got a good offensive line. Their main question mark is finding Joe Thomas' successor. Other than that, they have really good interior players. Their center and their two guards, they're in perfect position moving forward.
Okay. Well, I still don't think that they get Saquon. I really don't. I mean, they could, but I don't see that happening. So I don't like us moving out of the second pick. And a lot of people are saying we should trade down to get extra picks. And I don't think that they're taking it into consideration that we don't know what's going to happen with Ereck Flowers. You know, we don't know if we're going to wind up trading him either before or during the draft to get more picks of them. So we need to take that in consideration. Now, what I wanted to talk about today is I just wanted to give you guys a handful of dark horses in the draft.
Sure.
That I wanted to bring you guys attention, and you just tell me what you think about it. Okay, so the first guy I really like is Lorenzo Carter.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a really good 3-4 defensive end or outside linebacker, kind of like an OCU Meyer type of guy. The second guy I like is Brandon Parker, the offensive tackle from North Carolina A&T. He's kind of under the radar, but I think he has the build of a starting guard more so than a tackle. Let's see, who else I like? I like the running back out of Alabama, Bo Scarborough. He did well in the combine, a lot better than I thought he would. You know, he kind of burst on the scene at the combine a lot. Another guy that I like in the draft is 6'5", 220-plus, Equanimeous St. Brown, the wide receiver from Notre Dame. I really like him.
He's got a family full of wide receivers, yeah.
Yeah. And there's one more guy that I was thinking about that I wanted to bring to you guys' attention. Let me see if I can think about him. I really can't think about him. I know my time is short right now.
Well, if you think of the name, you can always tweet at us and bring it up on a future show. We'll give you some of our thoughts on those players. And appreciate the phone call, Ty. Always good to hear for a Ty. And find that sleepers is always the big thing, I would say, for most teams. You're always looking more for who maybe you could grab in the fourth rounds and beyond, much more so than, you know, who's going to be there at 2 and 3.
Yeah, we should tell people, by the way, we will have Big Blue Kickoff Live draft shows while the draft is going on Friday night. Rounds 2 and 3, John Schmelk and I will be here to deal with the Giants picks as well as what's going on around the rest of the league. We'll also have a special show on Saturday afternoon to deal with the third day of picks. So if you want to call in then, it's a better time to talk about some of these guys because we'll be talking about those names that are still left on the board.
Yes, well, because those are going to be the players that you're going to have to be thinking about. With respect to, you know, the offensive lineman that he brought up from A&T, Brandon Parker, you know, it comes from a good lineage because his father played football for North Carolina. So, you know, that's something that is appealing. And obviously, you know, he's got to continue to fill out his frame. You know, I think that's one thing that, you know, I've noticed. And, you know, here's my other concern about Parker. When you have an offensive lineman, Paul, that's 6'8", it's similar to, we were talking with Jeff Risden about Colton Miller from UCLA. You just wonder whether or not the game of leverage is going to be an issue. Can you get in that position where consistently down in and down out, you're going to be in a position where you're going to be able to beat and block the guy opposite you? That would be my concern.
I had him as a third-round pick. He was a four-year starter at left tackle for North Carolina A&T. I liked his hands, his punch, his agility, and his footwork. What I questioned was level of competition, and here's the one that goes into what you just said, his ability to anchor. And when you're 6'8", 305 pounds, you know, that's a bit lean. And you have to be able to anchor. You can't get pushed around. You can't have your feet moving backwards. So, you know, he's going to have to add some bulk, especially, you know, to his legs as he tries to, you know, deal with the leverage that many players are going to use against him.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Warren is in Wyoming. Warren, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it.
Thanks for making it. What do you got for us?
Hey, I want to continue the narrative about taking Nelson. I just think the value for Barkley at one is just not quite there. First of all, he's only going to play 6 years or so. And then second of all, I don't think we have the O-line to, you know, really utilize him. But my main thing, I wanted you guys to give me your opinion. I have a pass for the draft, and I was wondering what you guys thought about this. We are on the clock at two. And we call the Jets and say, hey, the Bills got an offer for us. We can't refuse. But we'd rather trade with you guys and just trade back. We don't deal with them. I'd almost take as little as their third-round pick for the swap because we know they're going quarterback. And if we know we're going Nelson, it doesn't hurt us at all. We'll take whatever they offer. And then you can almost do the same thing again with the Browns because I don't think they're going. They're going to go Barkley probably at four. But then we bump back. We get a couple bonus picks, and we still get the guy we want.
But remember, it all depends on if you're the Jets and you like two quarterbacks, then I think probably you're going to say to yourselves, why are we going to give up another resource to move up one spot when we're content with, of these next two picks, we're going to get one of our guys?
They've already emptied the cupboard with the three number twos
exactly.
To move up as high as they did.
That's another good reason why I find it highly doubtful that they would even want to move up one spot.
Just for a three, you don't think they're just like enough.
They already gave up. I mean, keep in mind, Warren, they gave up three twos to move with the Colts.
Yeah.
Now you want to give up another three? I mean, you got to start asking yourself, there's more to building a team than just your first-round pick.
Right. All right. Paul, who do you like if we were going to go running back in the second round? Who do you like? I'll take your call. Take it off the air.
All right, Warren. Thanks for weighing in. Appreciate it.
I really, really like Geist, but I don't think he's going to be there. I would probably lean more towards Chubb because I think he provides more of the power running game that the Giants don't necessarily have right now. I think Michelle will be the more explosive back, but I probably think Chubb's a better fit for what the Giants need.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I really like Michelle, too, and I like Rashad Penny as well. I mean, there's some concerns about, you know, pass protection and this and that, but Penny's got the special teams aspect that Barkley also brings to the table, so that's appealing. Like I said, there's a great deal of depth at running back. If they don't go Barkley, let's say number two, I still think the Giants are going to be in a position in the second round that if they want to go that route, they should be able to walk away with somebody who could come in and, you know, be a good part of that mix.
Before we kick it out, the question was asked to me by John, you know, do you want Barkley and one of those offensive linemen in the second round, or do you want Nelson and then one of the running backs in the second round? Which one would you favor? And I think Barkley and somebody like Price or Ragnow or Hernandez or one of those guys, to me, that's the better selection. But I think you won't go wrong with either one of those.
No, well, that was going to be my response. You really can't go wrong. I think either one of those combinations is a good situation to be. But it's a good question.
It is.
To give some school of thought about, you know, do you go for the best running back and then maybe that second, third offensive lineman? Or do you go with the best offensive lineman and then settle for that second, third running back?
Yeah.
Good combination.
Just to make it clear, value will meet need at the top of the second round for either running back or O-line because there are enough of good quality players at both positions where you can mesh value and need and not have any problem doing so.
Now, this is your last show before the draft?
Yeah.
Or am I wrong about that?
Yeah.
I am right.
Yeah.
Do you want to go on the record?
I'm taking Barkley.
Okay.
That's it. Done.
Just wanted to give you the opportunity to do that.
Taking Barkley.
So there's no question marks.
I'm taking Barkley.
Issues. All right. You heard it first. Saquon Barkley, Paul DeTino.
I've been there since the combine. How am I going to back out?
Right here on
Giants.com.
Because
they're not going to get the trade.
Yes.
The trade's not going to happen. Barkley.
All right. Just wanted to make sure that you looked into the camera.
See you, folks. We got to go to practice.
Yes. All right. We'll be back up and running tomorrow, noon Eastern, getting you set for the draft, taking your phone calls. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.